This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. My name is Ben. That's our super producer, the one and only Mr. Max Williams. Woo! On the ones and twos of super production, I guess. And Noel, you're coming from a different place today, huh?
I'm coming in hot. If you hear like some, you know, sirens or like a car crash or just people screaming, it's because I'm right by an air conditioning window unit at a rented apartment in Bushwick. I was on vacation and then it was like, oh no, we got to record an episode. And then also the Wi-Fi stopped working. So I'm doing this really like roundabout way of recording this right now. So my apologies for any substandard quality of the audio. It'll still be the crisp Noel Brown sound you're used to, but you might hear some extra little goodies in the background, like my flatmate Scott folding up the sheet so we can get out of here in time for checkout.
It's gonna sound great. We're hearing you loud and clear. And you know, one thing the pandemic has taught me is to think of those extra kind of unintended sounds or mm-hmm. those Bob Ross happy mistakes as just another part of entertainment. I think it was Franklin D. Roosevelt who said, "Entertainment is always a national asset, invaluable in time of peace. It is indispensable in wartime."
Well, I feel like a national ass hat because of putting you guys through the ringer with my weird situation. So thank you for rolling with me in this episode today, which is, as you were alluding to, about wartime. I named my file that I'm recording War Pianos. What does this mean, Ben? What does this mean?
Ah, yes, War Piano. Well, as you pointed out, my friend, before we started recording, this would be a great band name, maybe an album name, but mm-hmm. this is also a true story. During World War II, it turns out, the Steinway & Sons Piano Company created specially built pianos for U.S. military troops, and these were called the Victory Vertical. Sometimes they were literally airdropped into conflicts just to provide a bit of relaxation. And, you know, they were made in a place not too far from where you're staying. They were made in a factory based in Queens.
That's right. The Steinway & Sons factory in Queens. it was specifically a factory where they manufactured these specialty pianos that were made to be sold directly to the U.S. government. You know, and it's like imaginations can often run wild in ridiculous history when we see these headlines before we dig deep in. And in my mind, I just kind of was picturing the sort of Fellini absurdist version of the story where we're actually dropping pianos on the enemy, you know, because, you know, when you drop a piano from a great height, it makes a really terrifying sound. Also, I found this out from a documentary. I can't remember exactly where I saw it, but if you drop a piano and it, like, you know, survives, as in it doesn't, like, completely, the strings don't just completely, you know, break and explode. And I use the word explode not lightly, because if you are not careful, or if you are not, like, paying attention, it's almost, it becomes a ticking time bomb. Because if the I believe it's called the string bed or something like that, the part of the piano where the strings run across, if that gets cracked, then the piano becomes essentially unsound, structurally unsound, and it can you know, slowly get to the point where that thing's going to break. And what do you think happens when it breaks?
Piano!
Boom.
Yeah, yeah.
Literal explosion of piano wire and wood and shrapnel. So it could have been potentially a good weapon, but that is not what we're talking about today. We're talking about more of a way of uplifting the troops and giving them a little bit of, you know, leisure time or something to kind of, like, you know, take them away from the horrors of war.
I like the idea, though. It's a good point. I like the idea of every piano being a potentially deadly pinata. If
exactly.
you just catch it on the wrong, you know, catch it on the wrong side of the strings.
The wrong side of the strings. I'm sorry.
Yes.
That's great.
You're right. It's also, this is also a boon to piano manufacturers. Let's dive in. Okay. So we know that during World War II, people were still people. They loved music, right? And music was bringing folks together, especially as troops were scattered across the European and Pacific theater. There's something different here, because in World War One, radio wasn't really a thing for the average mm-hmm. person. But in World War Two, by December of 1941, over 95%, like 96.2% of people owned radios. And so millions of Americans would gather around and listen to music, listen to news from the front. This unified people. It had this massive, amazing effect on morale. And this is something that government officials recognized. They started thinking about how to keep the spirits of soldiers up despite the horrors of war.
That's right. The idea of morale isn't just like a PR thing. I mean, it can actually affect how soldiers behave, you know, in the line of duty, how alert they are, and how, you know, behind the cause they are. Because, I mean, it's when people start really feeling despaired or, you know, homesick, it can absolutely affect the way they fight and the efficiency with which they, you know, conduct themselves in the field of battle. So what was the best way to keep soldiers' morale up was a very important question that the government had to figure out during World War II, because this was also an absolutely unprecedentedly nasty war. It was absolutely very, very traumatic for all of these soldiers and their families. MichiganRadio.org has a fantastic article about the push to get pianos to the front lines that talks about a lot of this stuff. Highly recommend checking that one out. But the government ultimately figured out the most efficient and powerful and doable way to keep the soldiers' morales up was by essentially shipping them or airdropping them pianos, but not just any pianos. These were pianos that had to be specially designed and reinforced so that they could actually be parachuted into conflict zones. Jonathan Piper, who manages artifacts and exhibitions at the Museum of Making Music in Carlsbad, California, which sounds like a place I would love to go to. This place also has several examples of the pianos from this Victory Vertical project in their collection. And he goes on to talk about the military legacy of the Steinway & Sons company. The president at the time had four sons that were in the military themselves. So he had actual skin in the game. And the company had already kind of shifted their production to building things like tails and wings and parts, you know, for military transport, yeah, like gliders and all of that. And because of that, they already had these parts to kind of bolster these pianos and make them ready to go to be airdropped into these very dangerous zones.
Yeah, exactly. And this is part of a larger trend that we see in manufacturing during World War II. Majority of U.S. industry shifted to a wartime economy. I did an episode about this for car stuff a while back. You know, like, it's not fair to say that auto production numbers dropped. They disappeared. And all the automakers were making stuff for the war. And of course, people at Steinway and Sons are also able to push their manufacturing base into products that will benefit the war effort. The thing with this idea of Uncle Sam saying, hey, make us pianos. We will pay you a guaranteed amount of money and we need this many pianos. The thing that's cool about that is that that could make the difference between the business staying afloat or going broke. But there was a catch, because these pianos might need to be airdropped. So just any normal old piano is not going to, it's not going to do the deed. This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
If we've learned anything in the process of doing this podcast, just living life, it's that there's always a catch.
So when we heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month if you get a 3-month plan, we looked at each other and we thought, nah, what's the catch?
But here's the thing. In this case, there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online.
Yeah, they cut out that middleman cost of retail stores and they pass those sweet, sweet savings directly to you. We're not joking. We have tried out Mint Mobile ourselves and it's super convenient. And it actually, like, we tried to find a catch and there's not one.
So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan.
Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah, it was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos and the last one, God bless it. I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com. If you've ever moved a piano, you know it's a pain just when it's on the ground. So
not only that, I mean, it's such a particular piece of, you know, kit that typically there are whole companies that are devoted to just moving pianos because you have to handle them a certain way. Because like I said, they could be really dangerous if something gets cracked and literally, you know, you can have exploding wires, you know, coming for you. This is the part of the story that I find really interesting, like specifically how they kind of ruggedized, you know, wartime-ified these pianos. It's really interesting and clever and specific stuff that you wouldn't necessarily think unless you were a piano person.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the Steinway Company at this point is already famous for the high quality of its musical instruments, but these are pretty much works of art, right? They're quite fragile. You have to be careful with them. So they needed to figure out how to design a piano that was super durable. And with this, we want to give a shout out to Atlas Obscura with their excellent article, When the Pianos Went to War, by Wenny Lee. This article also introduces us to Jonathan Piper, who's the manager of artifacts and exhibitions at that Museum of Making Music over in Carlsbad. And he points out that Steinway needed to not only create a piano that could take a beating, but they also had to create a piano that was cheap to manufacture. They had to be careful with their materials because, you know, there was a lot of rationing going on. There were a lot of shortages. And this is where we see some of those features they talk about. Like, it doesn't have legs because legs will break off when you drop it from the air. Sure. I think they used a different kind of glue as well. The list goes on. Oh, they also don't have ivory keys.
That's right. It was a water-resistant glue, which makes sense. They used something that's referred to in this Atlas Obscura article as anti-insect treatments, which I guess makes sense because a piano is sort of a cavernous thing where if you had, like, insects that got in there and, like, you know, bread could be a real problem and it could carry, you know, potentially disease-carrying insects, you know, into an area with lots of, you know, infectable humans, even if it's just something like lice, right, or something like, you know, bed bugs maybe. I'm just guessing here, but that seems like the reason for that. And the keys were covered with celluloid instead of ivory. And here's some of the little specific details that I think are interesting, because you're right. This was obviously an important thing for the military brass and the idea of, you know, making sure that the morale was up. But the materials were really precious and they had to be, you know, used to make things like weapons, actual weapons of war and transport, like we were talking about, which is what the Steinway Company was already partly to manufacture. So they needed to use as little metal as possible in one of these, specifically a tenth of the metal that would have been used in a normal piano. So in order to do that, for example, the bass strings, the really low rumbly strings on the left side of the piano were wrapped in soft iron instead of copper, for example. Mm-hmm. And they were able to reduce the metal in the piano, not only because it save them those precious materials, but also made it where four soldiers could carry the thing. It was still 455 pounds, but they had to make it where, you know, it was doable because it would be dropped into a place where it would then be intercepted and they'd have to carry it back to the base. And they also, I believe, like added like handles on the side that would allow them to do just that.
Yeah, yeah. And this also has, visually, it's different. It has olive green, blue and gray paint job instead of like a glassy dark wood finish.
So it's like a camo piano, right? Essentially.
Yes, yes. A camo piano, a PMO. We'll work on it. So right. These are, like you said, these are lightweight. They're designed to be able to move, according to a professor at Eastern Michigan University, concert pianist Garrick Peterson, who is heading the Victory Vertical Project. These pianos, the Victory Verticals, or OGs, as we'll find, only had about 33 pounds of metal. For comparison, a normal upright piano would have about 300 pounds of metal. So they cut a lot out, right?
So clever. I mean, it really is very ingenious the way they were able to figure out how to do this while making the thing sound like a Steinway & Sons piano, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, one of the only unmusical things about this was the official government name, which was the Olive Drab Government Issue Field Piano, abbreviated to OG. OG?
Olive Drab is, I think, the most Oddie? Like, I love Oddie. It. No, it's definitely odd. Olive Drab to me is like the most depressing sounding name for a color ever. I don't know why. I think it's just the word drab. But the thing that's neat too is Steinway, it was such a legacy brand already at that point. They'd been making pianos before even the metal frame piano became a thing. That wasn't patented until 1825. So this is like a very old company that had experience kind of making pianos without metal frames. So they were uniquely positioned to be helpful in this Vertical Horizon. I'm kidding. It's not what it's called. It's called Operation Victory Vertical, but Vertical Horizon did have a banger or two back in the early aughts.
Absolutely. Yeah. So this task of getting these pianos and bringing them out to people fighting on the front falls to something called the Special Services, which was the entertainment wing of the U.S. Army Service Forces.
Is that like the USO or what they're connected to? Yeah.
I believe so. So the Special Service, their entire job is to keep that morale high. So they're the ones who are in charge of the logistics here. Steinway, when they get this deal, they go on to make more than 3,000 of these specially designed pianos between 1941 and into 1953 during the Korean War. They were dropped into the field by parachute, and they would come with tuning equipment and instructions. And that's kind of weird. It feels stressful to already be in a battle and say, okay, now it's time to teach myself to tune a piano. Everybody be quiet for a second.
I will tell you, I don't own an acoustic piano, but I do own an auto harp, which is a similar mechanism, like string-wise. It's all of these strings that are connected with these kind of like keys that you have to tighten with an Allen wrench or almost like a ratchet. So you have to have a special wrench that you know, even can like turn the thing to tune it. And then there's so many strings that they're, you know, each one has to be kind of tuned individually. So it takes a long time and requires quite a lot of precision. And it's not something that really just any, you know, kind of novice could do. I just looked up and my internet came back, by the way. How about that? I just looked up Victory Vertical Pianos for sale and I found one. It is 20,000 English pounds. It is really neat looking. It is as advertised, Ben. It is this olive drab. It looks exactly like if a government issue anything. It's a government issue piano. Might as well be a freaking thermos, you know, but it just has keys on it. And it's got like, you know, the place where the music stand would come out. It looks like it's kind of like ratcheted shut, almost like a window that's got boards on it. And it's an upright piano, like you'd picture like a honky tonk kind of like barroom piano. And then it shows on this page the container that it was actually dropped in. It's not just dropped keys out, you know, right, like ready to go. It's in like a giant wooden packing container. But what a cool group of photos here, because it shows a bunch of army buddies gathered around the thing with one guy playing and everyone else just kind of palling around, leaning on the piano. I mean, it really, you can see what an effect on their morale it had. Like they're very happy. Oh, yeah. and just kicking it, you know?
Absolutely. You know, this and these weren't all exclusively dropped out of parachutes. A lot of them were trucked to different USO centers. Some of them were even on submarines. So, they, like, imagine installing a piano on a World War II era submarine. Wow. This piano in the submarine. Yeah, it was actually put in before the submarine was fully constructed. They kind of built it, the piano into the thing. So when the submarine got decommissioned, they couldn't get rid of the piano without taking apart the entire boat. Because as you can imagine, space is tight on submarines.
I was about to just say, yeah, how do you even, that seems like the last thing you'd be willing to sacrifice space for on a submarine. Or they maybe needed to build a submarine version that was a
little. Somebody probably slept on top of the piano, right?
That's a good point. That's a good point.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
I love that you're mentioning this image of people coming together and singing, right, and playing music. This is a crucial point to acknowledge. because the World War II U.S. Army was a draft army, meaning people were conscripted, meaning these weren't necessarily career soldiers, right? You'd have musicians, you have people who ordinarily were just like playing the piano for a living, who got pressed into the military. So imagine how cool it is when, you know, you and your crew see one of these pianos getting dropped, and then the guy you know from Missouri or whatever who plays piano is like, oh, I could go nuts on this for days. That's amazing.
Well, and let's think about it. I mean, back then, the piano really was like the sort of jukebox of its time. Or like, think about like, you know, the old images of the old West with the saloon and the piano player. Like, that is where the music came from. This was like a human, you know, jukebox. And the pianos that were shipped as part of this program came with sheet music, and it would have been like popular tunes of the time, like classics, you know, like things like Chopin or whatever, or like maybe more like ragtime kind of tunes, but also would have had things like hymnals, like Protestant hymnals or patriotic kind of rah-rah, you know, sing-alongs and stuff like that, that everyone would have been super familiar with, and that anyone who would have been a pianist at the time would have been schooled in music reading, almost definitely. I mean, that was just like part came with the territory. It wasn't like there was any free jazz guys that were sitting down and just kind of like bopping it up. But even those guys came from usually very specific kind of classical roots or you know, academic music training. That's how music was viewed in those days.
Yep. And by the very end of the war, in total, remember earlier we said they'd made over 3,000 victory verticals exclusively for the military. They also made others that went to churches or schools. So all in all, they made ballpark 5,000 of these things. And, you know, these things are durable. Like you were saying, Noel, you can, if you have the scratch for it, even buy one today. We know also that Steinway didn't just make pianos.
No, we talked about earlier on, they were making like things like gliders, you know, like for paragliders or whatever, and other bits and parts and stuff that would have made sense based on their supply chain. But one thing that absolutely makes sense, because if you think about it, what is a piano if not kind of a coffin with like strings and keys? It really is. It's got a hinged lid. It's a giant case that houses stuff. So that was one of the things they made, was coffins. And then they shifted to making these victory verticals. And when you think about the fact that only 5,000 of these things ever existed, I don't think 20,000 English pounds is that much of a stretch. I mean, this is absolutely a museum piece, you know. I don't know. You guys want to pool our coins and get one for the studio?
You know, absolutely. We'll put it next to that gigantic grandfather clock.
Love it.
That we use with the Quister. So we owe a thanks to Professor Peterson over there at Eastern Michigan University, because he has been so instrumental in telling the story of the vertical victory piano. I'm not taking it back. We're leaving it in, Max. And he said that he had not heard of this story until 2010, and he learned about it when he actually got to sit down with Henry Steinway of the Steinways, the last member of the family that had been involved in the Steinway company. And he, the way Peterson says is, I sat down and I just asked him a ton of questions, and one of them was, tell me something you're really proud of. And he had no idea that this story existed. He thought he was the last person on earth to hear about it, and he started talking to his friends, other musicians, other professors, other pianists, and no one knew about it. So thank you, Professor Peterson, for bringing this story to the world.
Absolutely. And this story kind of does, it's sort of the beginning of a trajectory of this whole idea of getting music to the troops, right? The radio was tough because you're abroad. So those broadcast signals have to be, you know, local and like, you know, supported by the local regime. So if you're in a hostile territory, it's harder to, you know, I mean, I guess they could have set up I'm sure they did. If you think about things like Good Morning Vietnam later, where they had like, you know, radio for the troops on base, but this was an easier solution. As logistically complicated as it sounds, but in the dawn of recorded music, right, which was a little bit later, you started to get sort of an escalation of this whole thing, and then something that would ultimately be easier. The American Federation of Musicians, or AFM, did a strike from 1942 to 1944 over, surprise, surprise, disputes over royalties. So there was literally no music being recorded for record labels in the U.S. during that span of time. And again, I know that radio and Victrolas and things like that, recorded music, sort of were happening at the same time, but this was sort of in the heyday of like people being able to afford, you know, to have music, recorded music at the house. So the Army essentially started its own label, got a pass and weren't like called Scabs or whatever. So they were able to round up some of the biggest music stars of the 1940s and created something called V-Discs. V standing for Victory. And they were recorded exclusively for the troops. Again, sort of like the USO vibe in the live, you know, show setting, but in recorded music. And then these were shipped overseas. We actually have a clip here of what one of those sounded like.
Wonderful. And what better way to draw today's episode to a close? Noel, I'm always so glad to hear from you, and I'm so glad that you're having adventures up there in the Big Apple. Thanks as well to the one and only Mr. Max Williams. Thanks to Casey Pegram. And thanks to Alex Williams, who composed not that music you just heard, but the soundtrack for our show, which I think you're hearing now.
Absolutely, which, you know, consequently would have become the sound, will have by this point become the soundtrack of many of your lives. So Alex Williams reaching out from beyond, not that he's like dead or anything, he's just not here with us now. He would absolutely have been the guy in the Army who would have been banging out some awesome tunes on one of those vertical, Victory verticals. Alex is an excellent.
In the most annoying way possible.
Okay, Max, okay, triggered. I've definitely been to, like, you know, Ben, you or an improv guy, and they're back pre-pandemic times. Hopefully, I think it's coming back, but there's a venue where you always used to do improv shows called the Highland Inn Ballroom, and you'll recall that in the little foyer before you go into the, you know, the part where you're seated and watch the show is an upright piano, and I remember distinctly taking Alex to one of those and him playing it quite loudly for a borderline inappropriate amount of time.
Let me jump in here on that. I remember Alex doing that all the time, but not at a bar or a ballroom, but at our apartment. Every day. Every single day.
The man's got a song in his heart. The man's got a song in his heart and a spring in his step. And you're right, Ben. Practice does make perfect. But he would have been absolutely at home in the military sitting at one of these upright pianos. So Alex, here in spirit, along with Christopher Hasiotis and Eves Jeffcoats. And Ben, thank you as well. And sorry again for any weird Bushwicky noises that you guys may have heard. But we made it through. It was a little shorter one, but a really sweet one, if you ask me.
Well, you know my history, man. I've been recording in across the Pacific in undisclosed locations, etc. It's just it's part of the gig, and sometimes it can be fun to record in a new place and tell a new story. Also, thanks to the one and only Jonathan Strickland, aka The Quister, who may sooner rather than later drop in on our show, just like a victory vertical falling from the sky.
But more like one of these scary exploding types that I mentioned at the top of the show.
Well, you know, we'll see. We'll cross that Rubicon when we get there.
Only time will tell. We'll see you next time, folks.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.